episode 158 of the Cricket Her Weekly. There's been a little bit less cricket this week than the past few weeks when we've been recording this, but we've found some stuff to talk about. The big thing that's coming up is the Fairbreak Invitational franchise competition that's happening in Hong Kong, Sid. Now we're obviously not going over there, we're going to be in the UK, as are many of our listeners and viewers. So where will we be able to watch Fairbreak in the UK?
Well, Raf, that's a really good question and a really interesting question.
Because I heard it was going to be on Sky.
Yeah, and it was. Apparently it was going to be on Sky. So it looks like we've all been caught up with some politics of men's cricket. And it's all like, all these things are very much like, nobody quite announces them. And what looks to have happened basically, though, is that another TV company, a sort of rival, a potential rival to Sky over the longer term, who have some quite deep pockets, told the IPL that they were going to buy the broadcast rights for X squillion dollars. And the IPL were like, right, well, there we go, that's marvellous. Hey, Sky, we've sold our rights. You don't get the rights. So Sky were scrambling around for other stuff, and the Sky then said, okay, well, we'll take Fairbreak and we'll broadcast that.
Yeah.
What looks to have happened is that the IPL, this is a men's IPL deal with this other company, fell through, at which point the IPL had to go crawling back to Sky going, hey, Sky, please will you show our tournament? And Sky were like, hey, why not? And that's meant that Sky ditched Fairbreak.
Oh, no.
That means that Fairbreak has now been sold to another small mostly online broadcast, so you can get it on terrestrial television if you have like one of these cable packages. So it's going to be shown by a company called Viaplay. First of all, they are not showing the games live. So, I mean, the games are in the middle of the night. I don't know what they're showing in the middle of the night, but they're not showing them live. And then I guess that their audience wouldn't have been huge. But so on the other hand, it's live sport.
So we're going to get highlights packages.
They are going to show the whole game, apparently. But okay. They're going to show them delayed. So they're going to show them at the similar sorts of times to the times that the WPL was being broadcast. So, you know, late morning and early afternoon, sort of maybe something like 12 and 4, the games.
Okay.
So, first of all, they're not going to be showing live. And the second is they want £15 a month for it. They want you to take out a subscription for £15 a month. And this is for people that already pay £30 a month to Sky for their Sky Sports package. And people might pay a bit more to BT. And then somebody else wants £15 a month. And I can't see them getting very many viewers, to be brutally honest. And I don't really understand how Fairbreak have ended up in this situation. Because, I mean, hopefully they got some money for this. But they're not going to get good viewing figures out of this. I mean, maybe they figured they wouldn't get good viewing figures in the UK anyway due to the timings. But, you know, it's disappointing. And I'm guessing that the number of people that will be prepared to shell out £15 a month to, you know, another third-party thing. And another thing that happens in the UK, I don't know whether it's the same for broadcasters else or for people elsewhere with the broadcasters, it's really easy to sign up for these £15 a month subscriptions. And they often make it really difficult to unsign up for them. I once had to cancel my entire broadband package to get out of a subscription to BT Sport because it was impossible to cancel otherwise, unless I just cancelled the entire package.
Yeah.
Because you have no way online to cancel. You had to phone up some line, and then the delay on there, this was during COVID, the delay was like 2 hours. You know, your call will be answered in 2 hours, 14 minutes. And I was just like, I'm cancelling my entire broadband package to get out of this. So people are reluctant to sign up for these subscription packages. I've got no way of knowing what Viaplay's unsubscribe options are like. They could be, you know, Sky's is relatively easy, to be fair, although you have to go through like a 5-level thing of, you say you want to cancel, are you sure you want to cancel? Yes. Are you really sure you want to cancel? Yes. But look at all this stuff you'll miss out on if you get, yes, I want to cancel. Anyway, bottom line is it's going to be on this, of quite an obscure platform, and I guess that there's not going to be many viewers, and it's all slightly unfortunate for the tournament, to be honest.
It's difficult for Fairbreak because they're still at a point in their development as a competition where they really need that exposure of being on one of the main channels that somebody might kind of happen across it, rather than actually actively taking out a subscription.
Yeah, and they need the viewers. They almost need to be buying viewers at this stage because they want to be able to say to their sponsors, look, we know we get a viewership of X number of people in the UK, for example. And their UK viewing figures are going to be, I'm afraid, a bit of a dumpster fire this year.
So what is the solution to this? Because we have, I think we've talked about this on the pod before, haven't we? About kind of this suggestion that people are having to take out all of these different subscription packages to watch cricket.
Yeah, and it's not good for cricket as a whole as a game, you know. And really, the ICC needs to take control of this. And you know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about NHL, the National Hockey League. Raf went to Canada to see the to see a National Hockey League game, among other things, and. What they do is they have a subscription that you can buy from NHL and MLB, Major League Baseball, do the same thing. You can buy a subscription, and there are caveats for kind of your local side if you actually live in Canada or in the United States. But basically, you can buy a subscription and you pay NHL or MLB, £20 a month, and then you get access to every single game. And if you're living abroad, you get access to every single game. If you're living in America or Canada, as I say, there are some caveats for your local team. You won't necessarily be able to watch your local team live every time because they want you to shell out for a subscription to the cable company to do that. But at least there is one overall platform that you can go where you can go for all the games and you can get replays of all the games, even if you're not subscribed to the cable company. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that the ICC should be organising. And the very fact that we know that that's like the idea of that is a joke, because we know that the ICC is utterly incapable of organising anything like that for whatever reason, just further suggests to me that the ICC is not fit for purpose. It's an international governing body that's unable to govern because it can't do something like get a grip on the fact that its fans, the fans that it needs, are being asked to take out multiple TV sports subscriptions in order to be able to watch the games. And, you know, and at the end of the day, most of this money is not even going to cricket,
exactly,
right? You pay £30 a month to Sky, almost all of that, something like £28 of your £30 goes to men's Premier League football, because that's Sky's business model.
Just to say, because we're going to get some comeback on this, I don't actually think it is £30 now. I think it's £50.
Okay.
So
you can get an online sub for
£30. People may be sat at home going, I pay a lot more than Raf and Sid are saying for my Sky subscription. Anyway, we're on your side.
We paid £30 for the WPL.
Did we? Okay. Yeah. Well, it was money well spent.
Yeah.
But we don't know, not very much of it went to cricket, presumably.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting point. So basically, the ICC are failing to act again. I mean,
They're just not acting in the interests of fans.
Yeah, okay. Right, okay. In further news this week, the big news, big bucks, as I believe they say in America, Australia, another pay rise for the women. So I'm going to throw some figures out, Sid, and you're going to tell me how accurate these figures are, because I read it on a website and the internet must be true. So players who are on, this is domestic players, who are on both WNCL and WBBL contracts will be earning an average of $151,000 Australian dollars as of next season. And the lowest paid, so obviously the average is 151. The lowest paid will earn $80,000 Australian dollars, but that doesn't include match fees, which are obviously quite a significant proportion. So most of them will earn $100,000 Australian dollars, which is kind of being touted as this magic figure.
Yeah, so basically the players are going to be earning kind of between the lower end, you're talking about $100,000 Australian dollars, at the higher end, you're talking about $200,000 Australian dollars.
Okay.
That's where you get your average 150 from. That's how averages work. That's maths.
What?
Come back next week, we're doing some traction. but yeah, I mean, okay, so for those of us in the UK, I mean, very roughly, you're going to halve that amount. That's not, you know, don't do this if you're actually exchanging real money, but roughly half
so
that amount is going to be the amount
of pounds. If you're a domestic player, then you're earning between £50,000 and £100,000.
And £100,000, yeah. And this is for the domestic players.
Yeah.
This is players. This is your equivalents, you know, of, you know, your Marie Kellys and your Cordelia Griffiths, players that probably, you know, aren't ever going to get England contracts, that, you know, are solid domestic pros.
Yeah.
They're going to be earning up to £200,000 a year. Assuming that they play, there's one other small caveat here. This is assuming that they play the WBBL and WNCL. And obviously, because of foreign players in the Big Bash, that does mean there are 20, 30 players that play in WNCL that will not play in the WBBL. Okay. So they'll be on a bit less. But the bottom line is that this is, you know, more than twice what our domestic pros are getting. And, you know, it's a significant chunk of money. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, I wouldn't turn my nose up at that, Raf. I'm not, not sure you would.
No.
So, you know, they're doing nicely. I mean, it's still a fraction of what the men can earn in similar competitions. You know, so there's still like a big disparity between what the domestic female players are earning and what the domestic male players are earning. But, you know, it's got to be good news if you're a domestic player. And it means that you're no longer kind of... The problem for a lot of our domestic pros is that they're not really earning very much more than minimum wage. And there's pressure on them to take second jobs and to do coaching gigs on the side and things, you know, which are all positive things to do. And, you know, they could be the basis of a future career once their cricket, you know, once cricket is over for them and, you know, they've got the rest of their life to live. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's extra pressure that you don't really want if you want to focus on being a professional athlete. So, yeah, it's great news, isn't it, Raf? And who's really responsible for this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what it shows is that Australia are already miles ahead of everybody else in pay terms, and now they're going to be even more miles ahead of everybody else in pay terms. And the big place that this is coming from is that the Cricket Board and the Players Association are negotiating their new MOU, their new Memorandum of Understanding. Now, the last one, there was a big hoo-ha.
This is basically their contract, is this essentially?
Yeah. So they have, so they sit down and they have reps from the Players Association, from the union, and reps from the Cricket Board, and they have a chat and they come to an agreement about how the revenue from cricket is going to be shared between the board and between the players and between these kind of different categories of players. So your men's internationals, your women's internationals, your men's domestic and your women's domestic, basically, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Now, the last time they negotiated one of these, I think it was the last time, it was, there was a big ruckus about it because it was 2017 and it was during the World Cup, the Women's World Cup over here, and the women weren't sure whether they were coming or going. And there was a kind of conversation about whether they were going to be...
They might have ended up technically out of contract during the World
Cup. But this time around, from what we understand, it's been much more amicable as a process, and they seem to have been able to kind of reach a reasonable agreement that everyone seems happy with within the kind of expected timescales. So this is a sort of they haven't actually officially announced it yet, but this is what's being reported as it's going to be officially announced within the next few days.
So why hasn't the same thing happened in England, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's to do with the relative, I guess maybe the relative strength and also the relative efforts of the Players Associations, if I can say that. I mean, it doesn't reflect very well on our Professional Cricketers Association in this country that they have not negotiated pay rises for the women in the same way as has been going on with the ACA in Australia for years. And, you know, the reason why the Australian domestic women players are the best played in the world is because the men, who are largely the people who are at the negotiating table, you know, the men of the ACA have actually gone, well, we don't want the women to be left behind. We believe that they are doing a great job and that they should be earning a reasonable level of salary. And we're not going to agree to anything if we think that the women are kind of being underpaid. That's the situation that's prevailed for the last kind of 8 years in Australia. And in this country, what seems to happen is that the PCA are quite happy. I mean, I don't know the details of the negotiations that they have with the ECB, but you look at the result. Let's take the 100 this year. The PCA are quite happy to negotiate for the England men to have an enormous pay rise in order to have it as a carrot for them to play in the 100.
Desperately try and persuade them to actually play in the 100.
Yeah, while the women playing in the 100, who are basically propping up the competition because our competition is the best, is the better product than the men's competition at this point in time, are not getting a pay rise and are just having to stick with the same money that they were on last time. And as you've just said, the PCA are quite happy for some of our domestic regional women's players to earn below their mandated PCA minimum wage, which they introduced a few years ago. But it's basically a men's minimum wage. But then nobody will brand it as such. So, you know, the PCA like to say, oh, we're, you know, all of these people, all of the women's regional players are now PCA members, right? Because they're now professionals. So they are now allowed to belong to the PCA. Because that was the problem for a long time, that the PCA didn't represent women's domestic cricket, because they just went, oh, well, women's county cricket's amateur, yeah. So that's nothing to do with us, we don't care. Now they are members, and they tout the fact that they've got all these women members, but they don't seem to be representing them very well. And it just makes me a bit frustrated and a little bit cross when you look across to see what's happening in Australia. And the ACA seems to be doing such a much better job. There seems to be a totally different culture over there of actually knowing that, okay, we've got more money coming into cricket, so we need to be bringing that money into the women.
We're representing all professional cricketers, not representing the men, exactly. And just like letting the women kind of come along for the ride as long as they stick to earning a minimum amount. So, the other thing that's really interesting about this for me, if we can move on a little bit now, is that this is really a long-term strategy by Cricket Australia, which is interesting. So let's look at what might have been rational from an economic perspective. What might have been rational this time around is to go, the WPL has massively increased salaries, for the top people. We need to compete with that. So why don't we just like quadruple salaries for like the top players,
Alyssa Healy and Ash Gardner
and Meg Lanning.
Yeah.
And then we'll give huge incentives to people like Harmanpreet and Jemima to come back for WBBL. And then we'll just give a 2% raise to, the domestic women. Now, they've done completely the opposite to that.
Yeah, they have.
So what they've gone is, we're not going to be able to compete with WPL, but long term we're going to compete by investing in the whole of the game. We're going to invest in our entire cohort of domestic players, and give all of these couple of hundred players the opportunity to have a serious professional future. And that's the other thing that doesn't feel like it's really kind of happening here. We've got serious competition from football or soccer, which are trying to grow as well, and are able to offer salaries for the top players in the hundreds of thousands of pounds. So this is similar to the amounts that your Ash Gardeners and your Nat Sivers are currently earning. And we just don't appear to be making any effort to compete with that. And maybe, that's a little bit of us going, well, we can't compete, so what's the point? But I think that we could all be making more of an effort and thinking more long-term in the way that Australia are and investing in the wider game rather than just the salaries of the few people at the top. So I think that's really important.
And we're talking about the English context, but as we understand it, in India, this is an issue as well. If you think about kind of the big three, what are India doing to invest in domestic women's cricket outside of the WPL? Well, we actually had this conversation on the podcast last week, and we don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, Harmanpreet's salary in the last year has gone whoosh.
Exactly.
But more, your regular domestic players, their salaries have increased, but they've gone sort of weep.
Yeah, and they've obviously got, money that they've never seen before from participating in the WPL. But it would be effectively the same as if Cricket Australia said, okay, well, we're only investing in WBBL, that's it. WNCL, we're not bothered about. People who only play in WNCL, we're just not really going to pay you, that's not going to be a professional competition. It's not going to be a professional setup unless you're in our main franchise competition. As we understand it, that's the current situation that prevails in India. So we await further information and announcements about that. But India the BCCI aren't doing this very well either. They're equally culpable with the ECB at the moment in terms of that not spreading the riches
And investing
around.
In the wider game.
Yeah. So basically, we're really jealous of Australia. If they keep doing this, then they're going to be dominant for years to come. Now, talking of which, Sid, we've actually had an announcement this week which relates to the forthcoming Women's Ashes series. Australia have announced their squad, which feels very early, but hey, I guess they want to get them all together before they get to England to have some kind of camp. So we've got two squads that are both going to come to England, which happened the last time they were over here, didn't it? I think it's happened the last couple of times. So they're going to have the main squad and then the A squad. And it's likely that some of the people in the A squad may get kind of subbed in to the main squad. They're there in case of injury. Also, if they feel that somebody's particularly good at one format, then they could kind of have some movement back and forth between those two squads. But the main squad, let's focus on that, is basically the same as their World Cup squad with one addition. They've actually got Phoebe Litchfield coming in. So is she going to play, Sid?
Yeah, this is an interesting addition. I mean, Phoebe Litchfield is kind of Australia's Alice Capsey, to put that in context and to get some Capsey bingo points in there. She's a little bit older than Alice Capsey, but not much. She'll be 20 next week, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting inclusion in the squad because it'll be interesting to see if she plays. It's one of those ones where you'd imagine if they've kind of thought this through, they almost certainly think that she will play.
Yeah.
And she did play a couple of games against India recently, and she played a couple of games against Pakistan. So she's played in both the short formats. But if they think that she's not going to play, if they were just going to bring her along for the experience, surely you'd name her in the A squad. Because then she'll play all of the A games. They're going to play a number of games against England A, that would be her opportunity to kind of, you know, get game time. There's no interest at all in them just taking her along, you know, to run drinks for the, you know, the main Australia team. So you'd think that she's going to play. So, you know, it's we talked last summer about England's kind of Capsey conundrum of how do they fit Alice Capsey into their 11. I mean, you know, Alice Capsey's now come in, and where we are now, it's like,
how do they fit in everyone else around Alice Capsey?
But with Phoebe Litchfield, it's like, you know, is she going to open the batting, you know, which she has a couple of times, but she's also batted down the order a couple of times in her other couple of appearances. You know, where does she fit in? Who makes way for her? You know, if they wanted to open the batting, you know, does Alyssa Healy slip down? Does Beth Mooney slip down?
It's a tough one because they've got so many brilliant opening options, haven't they? With Healy, with Mooney, with Lanning. I'm sure there are others who could happily be doing that role. We were reminded recently during WPL that Jess Johnson used to open the batting at one point. You know, they've just basically got an entire squad full of people who could open the batting. So if your specialism is being an opening batter, then that makes it a bit tricky. But they've got to think about succession planning a little bit, haven't they? And they actually have got a number of players, a number of batters in particular, who are all kind of a similar age, who are drawing to the end of their careers. I know Meg Lanning's recently said in an interview that she doesn't see any reason why she couldn't play for another 4 or 5 years. But at some point, they've got to think about bringing the next generation through, haven't they?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if they do that. But, you know, if she's in the squad, we'd imagine, therefore, that they will be looking to play her. So, yeah, look forward to her joining us for the Ashes this summer.
Great. Well, we'll wrap up there. I'm really excited about the Ashes now. It feels like it's just round the corner now that they've announced the squads. Well, now that Australia have announced their squad. Anyway, we'll wrap up. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.